Hello everyone, herb lovers, sustainable health seekers, herbal medicine fans. Welcome back to Herbcast, our podcast from Herbal Reality. In every episode, we explore how traditional wisdom and up-to-date herbal science can meet the needs of the hour and support a sustainable and effective approach to our health. As you know, herbs have nourished human health for thousands of years, and whilst they hold so much potential to meet today's numerous health challenges, there are still so many questions to be answered. And we're delighted to have you with us today as we continue to deepen our understanding together. So get comfy, pour yourself a cup of herbal tea, and let's begin. Today's episode is hosted by Marion McConaughey.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Herbcast. Today I'm going to be talking to herbalist Sarah Rooney about hormone imbalance and optimising women's health using herbs. Sarah is a medical herbalist based in Hove in East Sussex, and her practice focuses on women's health. We first worked together many years ago when Sarah was writing an article on polycystic ovarian syndrome and herbal approaches to treat it. So welcome, Sarah. It's really lovely to be talking to you today.
Thanks so much, Marion. Yes, you were the editor, I believe, and you still are.
Yes.
For the Journal of Herbal Medicine. So yes, thank you.
Yeah, no, it was a great article. So let's kick off. We're talking about hormones today and hormone imbalances. So what do our hormones do for us?
Oh, our hormones, well, they are super, super important in so many things. Recently, we've discovered that within the body, just the estrogen receptor sites are about 150 different sites. Our hormones, when they're in balance, can make the difference how we feel as women. It's very important to realise our hormones aren't static things either, which they've kind of been looked at. You know, we have this cycle through 28 days, mass, or, you know, more or less, depending. Mm-hmm. But in each one of those different phases, our hormones will be an intricate orchestra doing different things, making us more energized, sleep better, our brain function better. So ensuring that our hormones work in harmony and in balance, it has a huge effect on how we feel day to day as women.
Yeah, so it's not just when we get our period and things like that. So it can really impact on kind of overall well-being and how you feel in yourself.
100%. And I believe that, you know, actually learning as girls or teenagers about the different phases of our cycle, you know, the follicular, the luteal, ovulation, the bleed, and what we can do to support ourselves and what we can do in those different phases is actually a real way to optimize our health and not blank them out. So that's something really important to me. And I'm even teaching 30, 40 year olds about this, you know, sometimes. So trying to get women really empowered with their hormones and how, you know, how useful they can be and what to do at different phases can really help in the long term.
Yeah, something we don't really get taught at school, do we? Which seems a bit remiss to not be doing that. And then I guess what does a normal pattern look like for a hormone cycle?
So basically, you know, you'll have the follicular phase at the beginning, and then the hormones rise up to the estrogen rises towards the ovulation, which is the peak. That's what everything's preparing for, basically. That's also some people consider it your summertime. So it's when you're full of energy, your brain's got a lot of you know, you can think very clearly. You've got actually estrogen gives you more physical power and fitness, so you can run if you're if you're into running or sports. That would be the time that you can run with ease without even thinking about it. And that really builds up. And then after that, the progesterone comes in, and that's more of a calming, the luteal period, which then builds up to our bleed itself, where the progesterone peaks and then falls when we bleed, and then we have our bleed, and then the cycle will start again from the follicular phases after the bleed. So you can think of it as the follicular, the ovulation, the luteal, and the menstruation. Each one of those has different hormones that are dominant, and, you know, how you will feel at those different stages.
Yeah, I've heard about people sort of planning their sort of monthly schedule around where their hormones are going to be, and kind of, as you say, like training and is going to be better in one part, but even kind of focusing on like really challenging pieces of work at work, and like hitting them at a point when you know that your hormones are going to be working in your favor, and resting when you kind of know that you're not going to be working at your peak.
Absolutely, that's true. And something I really find is resting in the luteal, so that's the bit before your period, is actually more important than resting in your period, because your progesterone is very high then, and you feel tired sometimes and just exhausted. And if you can rest at that point, I often find that women's bleed is less symptomatic. They can, you know, it's not a complete, oh, I have to lay in bed for 2 days, or, you know, I'm really wiped out. So it's kind of working in harmony. But the luteal, the autumn phase, can be great for finishing jobs off, doing a bit of kind of organisation, getting things done. When you're more in that kind of retrospective quiet time, you don't want to socialise as much. Whereas, you know, come the follicular, spring, summer, you want to go out, do your talks, stand up in front of people if that's the best time to do it. So you can actually, to a certain extent, think about that within, you know, what you're doing over a month, particularly if you're suffering with quite extreme, you know, changes in symptoms or moods or more anxiety, perhaps, at different times.
Yeah. And do you advise specific diets at different phases, or different foods that might be helpful, or is that not something that you've worked on?
Oh, definitely. There's a lot of new research. It's really exciting. Like Dr. Stacey Sims is a US nutritional doctorate, but she's talking a lot about the different phases. And, you know, we can fast more, not, you know, we can have a lower carbohydrate but high protein diet in the follicular on ovulation, but we do need our complex carbs. With the progesterone, our metabolic rate goes up, so those cravings that we get are actually, you know, very much saying we do need a bit more carbs at this time. It's not the end of the world, you know, just make sure it's unprocessed good stuff, some cacao, some medicinal food, some turmeric, chuck it all in, you know. But that, we aren't the same. Men are very different from us. So men, you know, have very high testosterone in the morning and then it goes down, and it's pretty rare. There are some fluctuations, but they are very different in how they can, the day-to-day goes. They can fast a lot better than us, the same every day. Whereas with women, we really need to think about what our hormones need and where we are in our cycle while we're menstruating, and, you know, really giving our optimizing for our hormones so we feel our best.
Yeah. I mean, I've always justified my premenstrual craving for chocolate on the fact that it's got magnesium in it and that therefore I must need some.
One of my most popular prescriptions is cacao, a little bit of lion's mane, maca, some cinnamon for that luteal phase. And you just have it in some, either on your kind of oats or on some yogurt, or you can put it into some warm plant-based milk. So it's almost like that kind of hot, you know, warming, giving you all those nutrients as well as a bit more energy for that phase. So yeah, my patients really like that one.
That sounds like quite a treat. I don't use maca very much in my clinic. What are its benefits?
So it's energizing without being stimulating, which is really important for a lot of people. You know, a lot of women will turn to caffeine when they're feeling really like that, but maca will give you a nice boost of energy. It has hormone modulating effects, so it can, and it can, it's very nutrient dense, so it's really a superfood. From when I was in South America, you know, what they would be using it, they would cook it up. And they use it to give energy and stamina, and it's a big part of the women's, what they use. But it also has this really beneficial effect on the hormone production as well.
Yeah. Oh, great. So how do hormones become imbalanced? So what are the things that can lead to hormones getting out of whack?
So my number one is stress. Mm-hmm. I really feel like hormones, particularly in women, are very affected. Interestingly, in men, just a bit of a generalization, but you often see it go to the cardiovascular system. Mm-hmm. You'll see, you know, high blood pressure, things like that, you know, further complications. But with women, it's a real sign to me when they come in with really imbalanced hormones, like, okay, what else is going on? What's the bigger picture here? It's important to realize stress comes from lots of different avenues and pathways. You know, the food that we eat, if that's putting stress onto our system, we can talk about that a bit more later. You know, environmental stress, the day-to-day that we're living in at the moment with phones, social medias. And, you know, I think as many women have taken so much on, it's quite a weird time for femininity. We're working, we're doing the kids, we're looking after everything, running, still doing a big share of the work. It's not always, but that's a lot to take on, you know. And a lot of people I come into to come and see me are kind of what we say running on their adrenals. It's kind of like living off cortisol, adrenaline, and this can't go on forever. You often find, you know, in your teens, 20s, you get away with it, but it does start to build up, and then I see hormones getting very erratic. The other things that would affect it, I believe, is a big impact is endocrine disrupting chemicals that we've only really recently gone, wow, this is making a big impact. The research has been there for, as you know, it's been there for quite a while, but really now we're understanding that, you know, what we're putting on our face, what we're eating, the chemicals around us in our environment actually do fit into receptors within our own hormones, particularly estrogen, and can have massive detrimental effects. And we're not moving enough, you know, let's be honest. Since COVID, I think a lot of people are, you know, on their computer, desk jobs, more working at home, which is wonderful and convenient, but it kind of takes out a lot of activity. So, you know, I think we need movement. You know, there's factors of insulin resistance, cardio situations. We need to move. We're not meant for this. So I think they're the main ones. I'd say with stress, you know, we have to think about the pathways of where our hormones come from. So cholesterol, good fats, you know, they're at the top there. Yeah. And there are different channels and pathways that they can go down. Now, we want it generally to go down to produce the nice, you know, balancing women's hormones. Mm-hmm. However, what we find, there can be a different conversion when we're under stress for long periods of times, whereby the channel goes towards cortisol and adrenaline and stops producing progesterone. And so basically, I mean, it makes sense. If we're under stress, why are we going to have babies? We need to get out of the place. Yeah. Evolutionary, a lot of sense. But over time, I think that really affects women's hormone balance, and they become very deficient sometimes in those kind of more balancing hormones, fertility hormones, really.
Yeah, so I guess it's a little bit of a warning signal. If your hormones are imbalanced and your cycle's impacted, then it might be a sign that you need to be taking note and looking at other aspects of your life to try and figure out what's going on.
Well, lots of functional doctors and other practitioners saying it's a vital sign, really. You know, when you go into a doctor or you go into your herbalist, like, what with women, how is your cycle? Is it painful? Do you bleed a lot? You know, basic things like that could be really useful into channeling what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. What are the sort of most common conditions that you see in your practice then?
So, I mean, the menstrual disturbances are huge. So, you know, that could be anything from heavy periods, painful, erratic cycle. So then, you know, potentially not ovulating every month. You know, amenorrhea is the term, but there's different causes for that. Hypothalamic, when there's actually not enough nutrients, you know, there. PMT, and I've seen a lot recently of young women with really severe PMT and quite young, you know, in their 20s, really struggling with it. You know, sometimes people will come to me with a diagnosis of PMDD or we'll work together, but obviously that's quite extreme. Ovarian cysts are quite common when they're getting recurrent kind of painful cysts. Yeah. A lot of estrogen, what I term estrogen excess, not dominance, estrogen excess conditions like fibroids, adenomyosis, endometriosis is very tricky. but it can have a role with estrogen excess and inflammation and gut health and microbiome. So it can be a combination. PCOS, which I love helping women with, and that's where I started with it. And I just adore helping young women, any woman, because we can do so much with herbs and nutrition and really change the pathway of things. A lot of fertility support, preconception. A lot of women lose their libido, and to me that's a real sign that, you know, something's not right. To have no, you know, to have a completely flat libido means you're not in, you know, you're not in health, you're not feeling good. And of course a lot of the perimenopausal transition menopause symptoms as well.
Hi there, Sebastian here. If you're enjoying this episode, you might like to know there are plenty more herbal insights on our website. Come and discover more on the science, tradition, and practical use of herbs at herbalreality.com. You can check out our special features such as our herb library, where we have monographs written by clinical practitioners on over 200 herbs used in Western, Chinese, and Ayurvedic herbal traditions. We cover the traditional use, modern research, how practitioners use the herbs in clinic, any quality and safety data, as well as a sustainability listening, so you know how to safely use the best quality herbs in a way that protects your health and that of the planet. You can search herbs by the action, grouping them all together, say for immunity or by energetic function, all the immunological, heating or cooling herbs in one place. You can also sign up for our newsletter for plant-powered wisdom delivered straight to your inbox for the most up-to-date information. Right, let's get back to today's conversation.
I guess there's lots of different ways that herbs can be helping with putting hormones back into balance. And you mentioned maca, which is sort of very nutritive and has some of those hormone modulating properties. But how are some of the other ways that herbs that you use in your practice work to impact on hormones? And is it, you know, the best thing is to treat nutritionally and to reduce stress and then the hormones will sort themselves out, or do you kind of go in there with more directly hormone impacting herbs?
I think after practicing this time, we've got to do it all, but we've got to start somewhere. The herbs won't work if the nutrition isn't good and they carry on with this kind of stress lifestyle. So we've got to try and address everything. What herbs are amazing in my experience are they're the gentle push that can get these hormonal systems talking to each other, communicating and rebalancing. I always believe with her as herbalists, we are gently supporting the body back to balance rather than, you know, a medication you're going to take that will change the physiology. And a very well balanced treatment of someone it's important to kind of help and do that. So some of the ones that I really use a lot of, Vitex agnus castus. So that is a very useful in women with irregular cycles. It's has a progestogenic activity, so it's not directly like a progesterone, but it actually increases reception, we believe, the receptor sites to progesterone. Research does suggest its dopaminergic effect and can lower prolactin. I find it really good in normalizing the luteal phase, so that last phase of the menstrual cycle. And we'll very often have it as part of a formula. Sometimes I just use it in the kind of post bleed until the start of the bleed, so that it has quite a targeted time through that phase. So that's a really it is a really useful herb for us as herbalists, I believe. Yeah.
It's one that is, lots of herbalists use it sort of outside of a formula, don't they, kind of in drop doses, either just in the morning or in the evening. And why is that, do you know, that it's sort of evolved to be used like that separately? I mean, I just whack it in formulas with alongside other herbs, but I was wondering if you knew.
I think in a low dose, Vitex has slightly different action, or it's more of a normalizing action, so great for PMT, luteal insufficiency. However, I believe when it's really strong, you know, when you're in a really estrogen dominant place, i.e. really, you know, fibroids, estrogen excess, some cases of endometriosis, really severe, you know, mood swings, PMTT, I might whack the dose up or give it, I actually tend to give it more, you know, sometimes I'll give it in a capsule as well, or as a one-in-one, you know, in herbalism, we'll use stronger strengths. And in those cases, but I tend not to do that for a long term, just like a month or two to get the response that we need. And like I say, hormones are so complex, but all we need to do is nudge the system back into a balance rather than take it over, in my experience.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess it's like, what are your thoughts on young women being given the pill to sort out hormone imbalances and to solve hormone problems?
Well, so interesting. That's really when I first started, you know, came to herbalism and kind of thought that, you know, women really aren't being treated. There's not, you know, solutions here. Very much the whole concept of let's blank out your hormones. You don't need them. They're causing you problems. That old fashioned idea, you know, and I think women were very badly served historically through the time of just, you know, being told that, because we really do need our hormones. We need them for our brain, our body, our muscles, our heart, you know. So I think, you know, that was actually, that's quite detrimental in some cases. And as a herbalist, I'm particularly passionate about helping young women to get on top of their cycles. Because if something is showing up in their cycle, it can often be like a gut health thing. There might be liver issues, you know, they might be struggling to detoxify things. It's showing us that there's different, there might be nutritional imbalances that we need to look at as well. So by kind of putting a plaster on things and not getting to the root of it, and sadly, you know, particularly with PCOS and other conditions, you know, at a young age women are put on the pill, and sometimes we'll find because their body hasn't been able to have a cycle or get into a cycle, it's much harder in their 30s or whenever they choose they might want to have babies to try and get that back again, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Do you find you get more success when you've gone and got a better picture of what's going on through some of these, or is it just as good to be able to take a really good case history and sort of see the person in front of you and figure it out from that?
Yeah, I think we have to work on the person, what resources they have. I think, you know, you can get a huge amount of information from a good case history, but if something isn't responding, you know, I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't order any of these unless I was at a point where, oh, there might be something else going on here. I was chatting with a colleague. We were at the functional medicine training this weekend, and she said, you can do these a few times, then you get the picture, then you don't need to do them anymore, because that fits that profile with a woman, if you see what I mean. I think it can build into your practice, but I certainly don't believe we should be spending thousands of pounds on expensive tests. We don't need to generally as herbalists. We can use our really solid training and our clinical experience to try and rebalance things.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you know, if you know that someone's got an estrogen dominant condition, you maybe don't need to know what gut bacteria are there, because you'll know that supporting good elimination through working on the liver and the digestion is going to be helpful anyway. And probably it's going to be changing that gut microbiome profile that's connected with that high estrogen situation, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess why do you think women's health is so poorly treated by conventional medicine, and we've got to this point where people really do need to turn to herbs and herbalists to help?
Well, yes, going back to the blocking, you know, what we chatted about earlier, that whole mentality, let's just block those hormones, let's just, you know, stop them working, you know, from early hysterectomies, which was very common, you know, in the 70s, and let's just get rid of it, you know, without thinking about long-term consequences. The pill, you know, great for women's liberation, you know, freedom, But it's become something that we haven't really thought about sometimes in terms of the longer term impacts, you know, fertility and, you know, health implications of that. I do feel very strongly that women have not been listened to historically. So, you know, there's a huge problem, or has been, with endometriosis, and women have just been told that's normal. For me, if someone comes to me and says, I've got really bad period pains, and we do some work and they're not responding well, I'm like, that's a red flag. You know, it's not okay to be on a sofa bent over for 2 days each month.
So one in 10 women having it, and remarkable how little we know about such a common condition.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we really haven't given these women, I mean, it can be so crippling painful. I mean, it's absolutely one of them. I, you know, can understand it as one of the most, you know, difficult and painful conditions. So I think women have very much, you know, all the trials have been with lots of things as well, have been done on men, you know, when it's come to medications and treating things. So we haven't been focused on at all. And I think that really, really needs to change. It is changing slowly. I feel there's hope, but not, you know, a lot of women have suffered unnecessarily because of that, I feel.
Yeah. What sort of herbs have you used in the past for endometriosis? I mean, I know it's quite similar to fibroids, perhaps, as the sorts of herbs that you might be using, as both being estrogen dominant conditions, but are there any that you found really helpful?
I love Vibop, so cramp bark can be really useful. It's got the kind of analgesic as well as anti-inflammatory. It works quite quickly. It's related to the salicylate, so there's a pain relieving effect through that, and you can give it in quite good doses at specific times rather than all through the month. I find it works quite quickly, and
I really love the taste of that, actually.
Yeah, well, it's got those kind of volatile oils in it as well, hasn't it? So it's a brilliant herb. It's one of my favorites. And also to think about the whole body, because it's antispasmodic, you know, people who are quite stressed, highly strung, just to give that little bit of release as well within a formula, I find it can be quite a helpful one. And if you like the smell, that's a good thing too. I mean, good old turmeric, I find it's absolutely wonderful. You know, it does so many things, antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, you know, liver, the liver enzymes, phase one, phase two. I often give that as pain relief as well, you know, so they'll have, you know, a couple of capsules. I personally tend to use the root with black pepper, organic. I will use curcumin in very specific cases, but I feel I can get quite a good result with that. Migraines, hormonal migraines, it's fantastic. You know, when they feel it coming on, you can have one or two of those, and use them instead of having paracetamol, instead of having Nurofen, because then you've got the impact of those. And a lot of women find it really useful. And also insulin resistance and the whole, you know, pattern that comes with that, with blood sugar regulations, it's very useful. A lovely way, as you probably have it, and lots of people have it, is a turmeric latte. So that's, you know, on my list of recipes I give to women, because I think, you know, herbs just aren't in a bottle. They're also our food and what we eat. And the more we can incorporate it into our food, the more we get benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's sort of some of the pain relieving herbs, but there are other kind of more ones that impact on hormones change the functioning of the hormones.
Yep. So rosemary is a great one, actually. It's a good part of my I use a lot of that because it has effect on estrogen, so it clears estrogen really well, and on the liver. It also has a nice circulation effect, so that's not only in the pelvic area, but, you know, the brain. You can just have it as even rosemary tea, you know, clear a brain fog to get the circulation going. A lot of the time, the sluggish blood flow to the uterus, people aren't moving, there's a bit of kind of congestion there. So rosemary is a fantastic clearer in that way. I use barberry a lot with women with kind of metabolic syndrome or PCOS, where there's issues with blood sugar balance, which it's really good for helping with. I don't use it long term, but it also has a really great selective antimicrobial effect. It doesn't kill all of them like an antibiotic, but it has a certain, particularly on yeasts. So I use that in a protocol if I feel there's a lot of gut imbalances going on.
I guess it impacts on the microbiome positively as well.
Very positively. And you just use it for a short term, and you can get, you know, rather than having to like look towards antibiotics, you know, a course of berberine containing herbs or within a formula can really help. Ashwagandha has got to be in nearly every single one. No, not every single one, but a lot. An adaptogen, either that or reishi at the moment. They're my two, reishi mushroom. They're my two kind of hormonally supporting. Ashwagandha, interestingly, the research shows that it actually, in men, can increase testosterone. And so I had lots of people coming to me say, oh, but I can't take ashwagandha, I don't want more testosterone. But actually in women, it lowers it. So it just shows again that we aren't the same. And they believe that's through the effect adaptogenic qualities on the HPA axis. So that normalizing function on the control center in our brain that speaks to our hormones, that speaks to our heart and metabolism, everything, our thyroid. I find giving it improved sleep over time. It's not dramatic. It doesn't, you know, wipe you out like valerian or something, you know, wild lettuce or something like that might do. But it has a very good, it improves the quality and duration of sleep over time. So that's fantastic. Yeah.
A good one for cortisol,
exactly,
when people have kind of got really high cortisol and totally stressed and wired and tired.
Yes, which is a lot of, sadly, I mean, it is a lot of people yes. that come and see me, but you know, they're doing something about it, which is fantastic.
Yeah absolutely. So like, how can women empower themselves to have better health, do you think? Like, what are the ways that we could try and encourage this next generation of young women coming through to have better control?
Well, I think, yeah, going back to that cycle awareness, learning about your body, learning where you are. You know, if you're feeling really anxious and sad and it's your luteal, being aware of that in a bigger picture can really help. Because I think a lot of people didn't understand why they felt so, you know, so awful or down at certain times or what to do about it. So that's really important. I think, you know, working in an integrated way, I'm working with, you know, functional doctors now, you know, osteopaths, physios, nutritionists, like we can all support women and really help each other for them to get the best care. The model is in early days, it's private, but I think we're making inroads and showing people that women need kind of a whole package of care with certain things, not just one or the other.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we've had the kind of much greater awareness around the menopause now, and maybe we need to like send that back further down, so that before that we also have better knowledge and understanding of what's going on throughout the cycle.
I think as well, like I see a lot of women, there's a lot of talk about menopause, and I've, you know, helped women for years now with that. And through my experience, if we can get the hormone dysfunction earlier, they don't have such a severe menopausal transition, because the adrenal health is there. They've done some work on their inflammation. They really have kind of, I see us balancing things earlier, and those women, like, you know, 30s to early 40s that have then gone through their menopause, seem to have a much more balanced way, and when a symptom comes up we can address it.
Yeah absolutely. And what are the challenges with getting the best health advice? For me, it feels like there's so much confusing and conflicting advice out there. It's really hard for women to understand where the best place to go is.
Yes, Dr. Google can be quite a scary thing sometimes as well, can't it? And there is a lot of conflicting. I really love the work Herbal Reality is doing because it's a really good platform for solid evidence base, but, you know, bringing in the different energetics. So, you know, if you're going to do your research and try and do things, then I would go somewhere like that. I think if you really have struggles, going to see a really good qualified medical herbalist, you know, we can do some things ourselves, but you know, if you really need that support, we're trained for 4 years. Well, I did a degree, and you know, 500 clinical hours. We really, through experience and practice, we kind of can see the picture and can see what works, what doesn't work, and support you with all the other factors that, you know, that are causing your hormone dysfunction as well. I mean, I think that is, you know, diet really, you know, a good whole food diet with loads of phytochemicals in the forms of herbs and diversity and colors, and just that stress management. We really do need to think as women, how are we going forward? You know, is this balance okay? Can we keep on running and running and running at this rate? How can we balance things a bit more? I think that's important moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So herbalists getting out there and telling everybody what they need to know, and loads of really good resources online like Herbal Reality would definitely be good.
Definitely, yes. I think that's very important.
Oh, well, look, thank you so much for chatting to me today, Sara. It's been really interesting, and I'll hopefully see you soon.
Thank you so much, Marion. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Herbcast from Herbal Reality. We hope today's conversation has planted a seed of inspiration and deepened your understanding of herbal medicine, even answered a question or two. Please do subscribe to Herbcast wherever you're listening to this right now, and you'll be sure to never miss an episode. If you've enjoyed today's conversation, we'd love you to give us a 5-star rating and share it with someone who'd enjoy it too. As they say, learn something, teach something. It really helps us to reach more people and spread the good herbal world. You can also use a podcast review to share your comments and feedback about Herbcast, or perhaps make a suggestion for a future episode. It's always great to hear your views. If you can't wait till the next episode, you'll find plenty more herbal insights and all the previous Herbcast episodes on our website, and of course on social media. All the links you need are in the episode show notes. Until next time, take care, and thanks again for joining us for another episode of Herbcast from Herbal Reality. Bye for now.